So, JJ, what you're describing is a fatberg.
Fatberg.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I'm saying.
As a kid.
A bunch of fat and...
a bunch of... Sorry, I just got that.
Well, howdy, folks. It's Friday, and we are drunk and retired.
GG, you ready to roll?
We're rolling.
Yeah, I've been recording.
Well, he's not. He looks despondent.
That's just JJ. How did you go on the stream? Did you have success?
Yeah. So I got real close to actually getting it done. I didn't land it though, because I need to create a secret now, because we actually have to create a secret for the TF var that gets referenced inside of it. And I was like, this is a pretty good place to stop, but I know what the next steps are for everything to come together. Like, I even got it starting to do the Terraform planning for me and everything.
Nice.
So it was actually working. It just couldn't actually talk to the cloud yet, which is okay. But that's fine.
So JJ, why don't you tell us what you did for Thanksgiving?
Yes. So
food-wise, of course.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, I don't care about your family. I want to know about your food.
For the very first time in my life, I smoked a turkey.
Nice.
My dad has always smoked it for us as a family. And being that we live in the world that we live in now, I was trying to be a good citizen and good human and stayed home with my immediate family in my house. And so, but we wanted turkey, so we decided to smoke it, or decided to give it a shot for me to smoke. And we brined it for 24 hours in a recipe Ali found. It took about 3 days or 4 days to defrost completely, which is a little annoying. And then it was a 9-pound turkey. So it was a perfectly sized one for the four people in my family. Then we brined it, and then we shoved a bunch of citrus fruit, oranges and limes into the turkey and put it in, my Big Green Egg for about 5.5-6 hours. We gave it a 30-40 minute rest. And I dare say it was probably one of the best turkeys I've ever had in my life.
Nice, man. Awesome. Way to go.
I was prepared, completely prepared for it to be a disaster. And it came out as probably, seriously, like the meat was perfect. We devoured the whole thing. It was great. What'd you do? Cool.
Well, I think I can contrast your parable with a fail whale of a story. I bought three adorable Cornish game hens, or as I like to call them, personal pan turkeys. Mm-hmm. And I got them on the Friday before when they came in fresh from a farm. I had no idea what to do with them. So I left them in the fridge for a couple days and then realized, oh, it's a long time in the fridge before Thanksgiving. So I then asked Paul what to do. Didn't listen to him because I only saw the first message and just tossed him in the freezer. So frozen for a few days, defrosted successfully the day before, and then cold, wet brined them following a recipe online. And I just must have got the proportions wrong because it was terribly salty, like insanely salty.
So with your wet brines, usually the brine is saltier than you want your meat to be. And so it's really important to brine your meat for the right amount of time. Otherwise it will soak in too much of the salt.
Cool. So it was the night before Thanksgiving. I popped them in probably 5 o'clock into the bag with, I think it was like a little over a third of a cup of salt, a little under a third of a cup of sugar, sage, thyme, and what's the third one?
Water.
Well, yeah, water, obviously, jackass. some other spice too that is eluding me. Anyway, tossed all that stuff in, rolled around, popped it in, and then I took it out at about maybe 11. Oh, yeah, noon the next day. So less than 24 hours, okay. I thought would be safe.
I would have thought so too, but I guess those birds are just so small that.
Yeah. Maybe they're like a little on the smaller side of a Cornish game hen too, because, you know, I tried to down a recipe that from 4 to 3 and it was very, very salty. Well, on the bright side, I did cook it very well. Like the smoking indirectly on my smoker grill setup at about 200 to 225 with a little bit of cherry wood in there. That was what I had. It was beautiful. Like they look great. They cooked way faster than I expected. So that was a surprise. Like the recipes I was looking at said like 2 to 4 hours and they're done in 50 minutes.
Ooh.
So yeah, I think I maybe just had little baby guys.
Did you spatchcock them?
I didn't spatchcock them.
You didn't.
Like,
okay.
I was looking for the presentation of like having the little personal pan turkey. It just looks cute. So I decided to keep them whole.
Were they like a pound each?
Yeah, a little under a pound each. Okay. That's my understanding.
Yeah. So that's maybe a little bit smaller than normal, but still. And I guess that's probably about right. Like you said, about an hour to cook it.
Yeah.
That's probably about right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I learned a lot that day.
that's the important thing.
It was cool. I'm glad I learned it. It was not a great meal, but I will not let that be the end of the story. I'm gonna play with other fowl until I figure this out and work on proportions. All right, that's my sad one, and you can be our mediocre one, Paul. What how was your Thanksgiving?
Yeah, so I actually did it a couple of days before Thanksgiving. You know, Rude. Given that. Like Thanksgiving.
I thought you're an American now, man.
It is like it's not even a real concept this year, right? So who cares which day you do it on? And so I wanted my actual Thanksgiving day to just be like chill, no worries, maybe go fishing, don't worry about a thing. So I think it was like on the weekend before I got a 14-pound turkey from my local HEB. I said, "What's the smallest turkey you've got?" And that's what popped out. I spatchcocked it, but not in the usual way. So when you spatchcock a bird, you usually cut down the backbone. I actually cut up the breast, you know, the keel of the breast, so right between the breasts are, and opened it up there. And then I broke and dislocated every single bone in that bird's body. Like I cracked all of the ribs. I popped the leg and thigh joints. I popped the wing joints. With the goal of being able to get it as flat as possible.
I want to say that this is not a visual medium. People can't see the glint in his eyes right now as he's talking about this sociopathic destroying of breaking every single bone. Just imagine it, and it's actually there.
I just and also want to add that we just started rewatching Dexter in the Broberg house, and I'm just like, I've seen this scene. Like, yeah, this is Paul, just a couple steps earlier in the process. Continue, sir.
So once I did that, I then dry brined it, just straight salt. Actually, I used some hardcore red on the underside, but just straight salt on the skin side, because I didn't want anything that would possibly like char or burn.
Cool.
And then the next morning, evening, I fired up the grill. And so my grill, I've got half of it, my charcoal grill, half of it is like a flat top plancha and half of it is a grate. So on the flat top side, I oiled it up and I actually I rendered down the like turkey fat bits and the tail and stuff and added some garlic and onion to like make an infused oil. And I used that and I brushed that all over the skin side of the bird and put that down on the flat top. And then weighed it down with some salt blocks and bricks wrapped in foil. with the goal of having as much skin contact with the grill as possible with the flat top. And I even actually cut down the legs and thighs and opened up the meat and spread it out there as well, so that it wasn't any of the skin facing up.
How did the skin not burn? What was the temperature at?
It was probably like 400, but there was a lot of surface area, a lot of turkey. So there was plenty of stuff to take that heat transfer.
Okay, right? Cool.
So that was probably 25, 30 minutes on that side. And then I flipped it over to the grate side with the skin side up, so that the more of the radiant heat would cook the turkey through, versus just the straight, contact heat. And then when it was nearly fully cooked, I then flipped it back to the other side on the skin side down. And I got to say, the skin was so crispy and delicious. It was perfect.
So it was like a salt brine only on the skin.
Yep.
And did you leave it open air in the fridge?
Exactly. Yep.
Overnight. Okay. Just want to make sure for those that are at my level of brining knowledge on this.
I do this sort of thing. I actually filmed it and I put it up on my YouTube channel. So you can actually watch me tearing this bird apart and cooking it and stuff.
I got past the filters.
I hadn't found anyone that has done that style before. So the style is basically from a Georgian dish called chicken tabata. And that's basically, they do that with a chicken and they cook it in a pan. And the pan they cook it in has a lid with a screw down clamp. So it actually presses the chicken hard against the bottom of the pan. And so basically I took that and basically did a turkey version of that as best I could.
Cool, man. Would you recommend?
I would recommend. It was fantastic. But you definitely need a large surface area. Even for a 14-pound turkey, it took up the entire flat top. And my flat top is probably what's a foot? Is that 12 inches?
Yeah, it's
dumb. It's probably 18, nearly 18-inch square.
Oh, yeah, that's humongous. That's a huge grill.
Pretty much took up, a small turkey pretty much took up that whole thing. But you can totally do it with a smallish chicken on a 12-inch frying pan and get a similar result, I highly recommend.
This is cool. I think I need to mess with this. That's motivating. Well, fun. Good Thanksgiving roundup. We'll post in the show notes any links to recipes. Don't use mine. Use Paul and JJ's. What else is happening in our lives here? Hallway gang.
So I had technically a staycation over the Thanksgiving break.
Good for you. Good.
I've been informed that I need to start taking time off. So I'm
very important. By whom?
My boss is multiple bosses, which is nice.
Good boss.
They're really worried about burnout, which is real. We've talked about it in the past, and I have been dangerously close, and they, I guess, saw it too. So they've been pushing me to start taking some more time off. And last week, or 2 weeks ago, last week, time means nothing.
I feel you, man. I feel like Thanksgiving was a month ago, and it was less than a week. Oh, wait, no, it was a week exactly. Yeah.
So I actually really did some things around the house. I reorganized some things that I've been desperately needing to find excuses to do, spent some time with my family, and really kind of just really got into some things. And it was good. I do admit, I did check my email a few times to make sure I stayed on top of that. But that's just me. I'm an inbox zero type of person. And it drives me crazy to see unread emails in my inbox, or that number that pops up on the little mailbox icon. Compared to other people I know who have literally hundreds of thousands of emails on their little phone thing, and it just, I just like, I don't, how do you?
I don't know how they sleep either, JJ. I'm on your level.
it defeats the whole purpose of that box, right? Like, why would you even have a number there? Like, it could literally be any number and it'd be accurate, right?
Anyway, for those not seeing the stream, we're watching JJ slowly implode.
My number right now, JJ, 58037.
Is there a niner in there?
Oh
God.
That sounds awful. No, I've got a pretty solid at inbox zero life. Not ride or die, but it's a strong preference. I didn't even think it was notable, but I did take last week off because I'm getting really good at the staycations. I had a project. The only project I ended up doing was some electrical work in the house. Like I reran a couple wires to like set up new switches and like put new faceplates on all the old crappy ones from when we moved in. I've been slowly learning that, and it no longer scares me as long as I make sure the power's off and check 7 times. Then I mostly messed around, man. I didn't even mess around in the tech stuff I normally do. Like I normally dick around with dot files, but I actually played Magic the Gathering for the first time since high school. And wow, it was really fun. I think I'm going to play more.
Do you play on that arena, the Magic the Gathering arena?
So here's why I'm playing again. I refuse to pay for it. And arena makes you buy packs like you're in person. And I just know it's a bottomless pit of money. But there's an open source project called Cockatrice that gives you a clunky but free interface to playing your friends in like a virtual game type. And I set up a Discord for a few buddies of us to play a tournament. And then there's another open source project where you can actually host a draft. Like you could do like a proper open box draft and like have rounds of deck building. And that's what I really loved. I used like more info than anyone cares, but thankfully we don't have a lot of listeners. I was pretty good. I played in a lot of tournaments in high school and won
a number
of them. It was kind of my thing. Like, so deck building is fun.
Did you have a pretty impressive deck?
You know, there are a couple favorites. Mirari's Wake being my favorite combo deck. You know.
Nice.
Maybe sometime you can show your deck to me.
Yeah, sure. Anytime you want, Paul. Anytime. I actually want to frame one of my cards, which is my favorite. And I looked it up recently, and I'm old enough where like one of my cards is worth like $900. Which is dumb. Mm-hmm. But
now, does Tabletop Simulator not have Magic the Gathering?
It does. You know what?
Yeah, I think it does. I haven't messed with Tabletop enough. Is that a good interface to playing games?
Yes. As long as you have a decent graphics card.
That's a big if.
Or a modern enough CPU would probably be fine as well.
Yeah. No, I should give it a play.
Should.
Yeah, this software, it's got like some custom shortcuts so that you can hop through the different phases and like keep track of things. But yeah, there must be a good interface. And Tabletop Simulator is so pretty. I should check it out.
And they've got a really good scripting engine. So any important, exciting, popular game ends up with a couple of really good scripted versions that make it really easy to play through. So JJ and I and some other friends have been playing a bit of Clank. Game, and we've been playing that on the tabletop. It's been a lot of fun.
That's
JJ,
awesome.
You should enjoy. Invite Matt next time we do that.
Yeah, I should. I'd be down. Other than human contact, I definitely miss board games. Like I have a couple friends that collect them. Like their innovation is kind of an obscure one. That's my absolute favorite. It's like historical deck building type thing again, where like you're building on top of history as you play. It's so like there's a bunch of references to like different cities and different times, and it's pretty neat. But yeah,
sure, that wasn't Civilization. You're just playing Civilization.
I'm just playing Civ, but in a deck form.
I wouldn't put it past them.
It's not a bad idea. But yeah, hey, you know what? Before I forget, there is one thing that keeps coming back food-wise that we haven't covered, which is what the hell is a nitrate and why? So I made all that bacon. I gave a bunch of it out to my friends. And when I told them how I made it, they're like, oh, that seems really unhealthy. Why wouldn't you use like uncured bacon style? And I don't have a good answer of what the hell uncured means and what nitrates are other than a cancerous agent.
Yeah. So let me break it down for you. So the curing process is actually the salt. And so when you buy uncured bacon, it is mislabeled because it's still cured, because it's still salted.
Okay. The so what does it mean?
So it's a marketing term because they've convinced people that nitrates are scared.
Don't scary use bad marketing as a pejorative.
Well, when
it is a misleading term is what I hear.
Yeah, okay, sure. It's a misleading term. Sure, we'll call it whatever. Basically, what they do is... So, first of all, nitrate and nitrite are different. And if I remember correctly, nitrate you use for things you're going to cook, and nitrite you use for things you're not going to cook. So if you're making salami, you use nitrite, and it actually, as it cures your meat, it turns into nitrate and continues acting, whereas nitrate just acts right away, right?
Okay. And what is it acting as?
The main thing it does is prohibits botulism. And that's one of the few things that salt doesn't kill, as it, like the bacteria and stuff things.
Is botulism like a hemorrhoid? I actually have no idea what that word means.
It's like it's probably the most common illness people get from like spoiled canned foods. Like when canned foods sort of start to like swell. Bulge.
Yeah.
Often that's botulism, because again, they've been treated with heat or salt or something. And again, botulism is one of the few things that can live in that kind of environment. In a can, it's an anaerobic environment where there's no air, right?
What happens to you?
So basically, you get sick, and these days you don't die, but you used to. Like back when medicine was good. Yeah, so it's not good. And so basically, it's like nitrite is the healthy part, because it stops you from getting... It kills the nasty things that the salt doesn't kill. Right? But it also imparts this particular pink color and the particular flavor of bacon. So if you've ever had... Have you ever had salt pork from like the grocery store? Maybe not. It's used a fair bit in like Cajun cooking and stuff. And it's basically... like bacon or pork that's cured, but without nitrates. But basically it doesn't taste the same. So what your uncured bacon is they find a finger quote natural source of nitrate, and they use that instead. And the common one is celery seed juice.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, instead of taking something that's had nitrates extracted from natural occurring things in a factory and like, distilled down to be just nitrate, they're taking the celery seed juice and just applying enough of it that there's probably enough nitrates in there to get the job done.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like complaining about CBD, but then going and smoking some pot.
Yeah, exactly. Or it's like complaining about MSG while you're eating your Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. So it's a process approach, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's dangerous or more dangerous than the naturally occurring, quote unquote.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. And there's more nitrates in a tomato than like in a pound of bacon or something like that. So there's a lot of...
Okay.
What about tomaco? Tomaco probably has quite a
few. This guy.
What the hell does that mean?
It's a Simpsons reference.
Yeah. Tomaco?
Simpsons is that cartoon your parents used to watch when they were young, Matt?
Hey, I watched it plenty, thank you. But I don't know that reference. That makes me sad.
Oh my God.
These schnozberries taste like schnozberries.
they made a genetically engineered tobacco tomato plant. It was tomaco.
Yep.
That's pretty bad. All right. Thinking about technology for our obligatory shout out to technology existing. I wanted to pick your brains on how much of a shit are you two giving about edge computing? Because
what is edge computing?
Yeah, like
I don't actually know what it is.
So can I give you two definitions I hear?
Absolutely.
So I hear two things. One is from cloud vendors telling you that edge computing is running their cloud in your data center. And then
Well, that's a really good one. Yeah.
Well, because they get to sell your stuff. And then I hear the other one, which is really small servers in a remote location running just enough stuff to service that remote location. So it might be like a Kubernetes cluster at every Chick-fil-A store, right? You don't want to have a full rack of like Dell 1850s or whatever, right? With a 6 terabytes of storage, you want a bunch of like maybe ARM processors or Atom processors with, you know, just enough to run the like register network or whatever.
So your desktop running in your office would be considered an edge computing?
If and only if it's talking to Kubernetes.
Hey.
But honestly, like if my naive understanding, it really does seem like you can expect to have non-Intel based CPUs. Like, okay, is part one. And this idea that you have some low powered system far away from quote unquote your core infrastructure, but is able to do more meaningful things thanks to 5G. Like you're able to do some computation locally, but this idea that it is one, you know, message queue call back to some core infrastructure that's talking in reasonably synchronous mode, even with things being very distributed. It kind of breaks my understanding of distributed systems versus just like, is this a message queue architecture with, I don't know what I'm talking about, is what it comes down to.
Yeah. So to me, it is like a section of a distributed system that can run on its own for an indeterminate amount of time.
So
it doesn't have to be connected back to like your corporate network or whatever. So if there's some sort of like network outage, or you have, you know, only like once a day you have a satellite overhead to connect you up for a short amount of time, that's enough communication to get and receive instructions, push data back and forth, and that sort of stuff.
So when it becomes really interesting and slightly real is when I end up on like a end user's perspective of edge, and they're actually running a factory. Mm-hmm. And like in their factory, they have some sort of analytics from all the different autonomous devices they have going around the factory floor and producing things. And they are able to capture it locally and get some, you know, low fidelity information out of it. But really, like the big number crunching and the meaningful dashboards of how productive they're being is funneled through them out to their main, I don't know what you call the core.
Data lake?
Hey.
Don't you fucking say that word. We said we wouldn't say that on the show. Yeah, some sort of data.
So there's a little data creek at the edge location.
Oh, God damn it. Yeah, something like that. Some little data river is flowing back to some big data ocean. And in that data ocean, there are little data ponds.
More of a data sewer, really.
That depends. If you're relying on the internet of shit, yeah, you probably have a data sewer.
Nice.
Oh, that's a great alternate project. If you fork whatever Cube Edge is doing and you start naming it after internet of shit references, and like we make a whole data sewer thing happen, it could be the exact same technology, just stay like basically pinned to upstream, but just call it like data sludge or cube sludge. Anyway,
set through the code.
Cool. So I'm hearing similar levels of, you know, like marketing speak about some portion of it that isn't very telling of.
Sorry, in this show we don't use marketing as a pejorative.
It's pejorative, pretty sure. Is it perjury? I say marketing speak because it's trying to synthesize things and simplify them, but it's not being clear on the synthesis.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm allowed to say it because I'm a marketer, in the same way I can make Jew jokes.
I'm a marketer too, thank you very much.
I beg to differ.
Well,
We're pre-sales now, CZ. Haven't you heard that's what DevRel is now, is pre-sales? That's
news to me.
Haven't you heard that whole story?
That's a new pitch. No, it was always evangelism is a solution architecture extension. I really do think evangelism has been like pulled out of DevRel into the sales org, but I haven't heard this pitch. Tell me more.
Somebody was mentioning it recently, and I kind of agree with them, right? Like we don't have quotas, which is always nice, or at least most DevRel people don't.
If you have a quota as a DevRel, just so you know, you're a fucking sales engineer.
Yeah, exactly. But we're so far up the funnel, right? Like we're there to like recruit people to say, hey, look at this funnel kind of thing. But then as you start
marketing.
But keep going. We have ties back into the sales org because we bring the salesperson along with us.
That's also marketing.
This is so fun. Keep going, JJ.
And then now you just completely derailed everything I said. Damn it. Okay, fine.
So somebody tweeted at me yesterday about this. Trying to dunk on DevRel is like just marketing. I'm like, if you put just in front of marketing, you just don't understand right. how complicated our industry is.
Well, if you put just in front of anything, you don't understand how complex that other thing is.
Yeah, but like particularly I want to respect marketing for a second. And then I think calling DevRel marketing is a misunderstanding of a job role versus a job function. And I think that is something that a lot of people just don't understand about the systems that are businesses. That like DevRel is a discrete job that people are hired for. If you have that title, you can get that title again. It is a good title to have on your resume. Some of your activities fall within the job function of marketing. And I think DevRel is the DevOps engineer of marketing. Like the only reason you have it is because we're living through the growing pains of not having great technical marketers and not having great product managers. If we had great product managers and great technical marketers, there's zero reason to have DevRel.
It's very clean and cut. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe to your point, JJ, in some organizations, they're also trying to fill a pre-sales function. So I should also say that like sales engineering may have a factor in this too. But like that's just a sign of how much people abuse this title, not really a sign of what the title does. Mm-hmm. And that is 100% why I'm not in DevRel right now. Like I can't stop raging against people misdefining the responsibilities. When I really just want to go get some shit done with the correct constraints on my role. So it's very clear where I fall right now. If I go back to engineering, I want to be just as clear. But you guys are really good at not giving a shit.
I'm not good at not giving a shit. Maybe it comes across that way, but I'm super care mad.
Oh, good for you.
I live my life in like a pit of self-induced rage from dying on hills I have no reason to die on.
You hide it very well. I don't. Like I literally tattooed it on my arm. Like I can't not.
What was I going to say? The DevRel narrative and how you say that the people kind of abuse that title and whatnot. I feel like when we were traveling, at least I got more exposure to people having DevRel titles that I didn't think were in DevRel or a developer advocate or even call it to your point. I guess because now that I'm not actually interfacing with so many DevRel people now, I've actually forgotten about that overextension of the title, right?
Sure.
And now that you brought that back up, I'm having a rush of memories coming in of like, oh yeah, that person was a developer advocate, but they were just a sales engineer. Like I was just I'm churning through it in my head.
Just a sales engineer?
Yeah. Way to own yourself right there. But no, like sales engineering, also a great expertise, also not DevRel in the way that we are using the term, in the way that, you know, Google initiated and the rest of us attempted to replicate, and some replicated more accurately than others. But yeah, I'm read a lot about this stuff. And, you know, I was editing, like, I was one of the editors on Mary Thingvall's book on the business value of DevRel. Mm-hmm. And it was mostly because I constantly argue with her about the definition of it. Because she includes like a lot of community management work in there, which I think deserves to be discrete, but it's discrete and it's still orphaned. It doesn't have a proper role because I think it's actually a role outcome. It's not a job function that is very respected in our industry. Like, I'd rather be a principal product manager who manages a community than a community manager who manages a community.
Yeah.
If nothing else, the community manager is always the first one to get fired.
Exactly. True.
Yeah.
Which is so ironic. We're like, we value our community, just not the person that manages it because they don't have a quota and we don't get what their job is.
Yep.
But yeah, it's really fun. Really fun. We really did something fun today. Do you guys think about what title you might have next when DevRel eventually falls out of favor, or do you just focus more on like the skill that you're learning or developing to keep going? You know, like, does that make sense?
I do think about it a bit, but I never come up with a good answer, so I get depressed and stop thinking about it.
All right. Well, I'm here for you. I clearly like thinking about this. JJ, how about you?
I've actually been going through an existential crisis recently about figuring out what my next step is. And it's hard. Like, it's really hard to figure out where I want to go with my career. And I keep saying this, and maybe someone can relate to it who listens to this podcast, but I've fallen backwards my whole career. Like, I haven't actually had a target to be like, I want to do this, right? I've always been like, oh, nobody's doing that job. Fuck it, I'll go do it kind of thing. And I just kept doing that my whole career to the point where I have the skill set I have. And now I have a selection of jobs that I can do kind of thing. Yeah. And
well, that's, I guess, maybe your thing as a, like, someone who's into problem solving is you see problems and you solve them. And the problems are where there's gaps where other people aren't.
Yeah.
And so that's how you, because I'm more or less the same way. I've certainly made purposeful choices about my career direction, but at the same time, a lot of it has been just like, this shit needs to be done. No one's doing it, or it could be better. I'm just going to step in and do it.
Yep.
Yeah. I think career paths these days are not ladders. They're, you know, really weird games of sorry. And it's opportunistic in this way that you don't always maximize. Like, somebody told me early on, like, if you're sitting across the table from somebody, you could probably get that job title next. And if you write down what skills you have and what skills they have, like, and you start pairing the difference, like, you could definitely get there. And he calls it optionality. And I think DevRel, if you're in a DevRel role, you have some of the most optionality possible in your job. Like, you could easily go into product management, into engineering, into sales, into marketing. Like, you can hop into any of them, but, like, you know, that comes with the paradox of choice, which is a pain in the ass of like, well, why do I choose and what do I choose? And am I looking for a promotion or do I want to say like hands-on? Like, yeah, that's a whole bucket of fun.
Why can't I be in the C-suite already? Damn it.
Yeah.
You could be.
What? You totally could.
No, I can't. I'm not ready yet.
But it would be a C-suite of a small startup.
You saying you're not ready yet is why you're not it.
Right? Yeah. Mm. I would say, look at how much C-suites fail to deliver on their promises, and that will reassure you. I feel the same way, though, JJ. Like, I feel somewhat experienced enough to do something like that, but I don't believe I am either. But it really comes down to like a comparison. And like, I think if you compare yourself and like, you know, you have a lot of the core skills, and really it's like, can you present something with the utmost confidence, even when it's incorrect? That's the skill I miss the most.
All you gotta do is say it with enough confidence and everybody believes you. It's great.
You don't have to be right. You just have to be certain.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, now that we're all a little sad.
Yeah. Well, let's, do we want to try a Buried the Main?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a pick me up.
All right. Let me see what I've got. So I had a few. I decided one of them was a bit depressing. So we don't need to skip that one.
Oh, I was going to say, well, that even more. Let's just pile it on.
Right. So here we go. Here is the title or the heading. Please stop stuffing Yorkshire puddings down the drain.
I think it has to do with old plumbing in the UK. And when people use a garbage disposal and put Yorkshire pudding down it, it is gunking it up, and they have to rip up all that old cobblestone to attempt to rebuild the sewage system from, you know, 1788.
I was going to go with maybe the same kind of thing we have here in Austin, where we have that grease ball problem in our water solution or whatever. Broberg looks so confused right now, so maybe
please elaborate for the non-Austiner. Yeah.
So at least in Austin, we have there's a problem with our plumbing in the grand scheme of things, where all the grease is collected together. So we have this massive grease ball in our waste disposal or wastewater system. So they desperately ask you not to pour any type of grease down the drains. They're like, put it in a Ziploc, put it in a cup, or not a cup, a tin can, and then put it inside of a plastic bag and put it in the trash, which I'm like, isn't that worse for the environment? But no one's ever given me a straight answer about that.
Yeah, so you're absolutely both correct. And I thought it would probably be a fairly easy one. So JJ, what you're describing is a Fatberg.
Fatberg.
And that's exactly what he's saying
as a kid.
A bunch of fat and
Sorry, I just got that.
So Fatbergs are not just fat though. They actually have structural integrity in the form of wet wipes. And so Fatbergs have become a real problem as wet wipes have become a thing. And people use wet wipes to wipe their bottoms and then flush them down the toilet. And they don't break up, whereas TP breaks up pretty well. And if that's even like you shouldn't flush tissues because they don't break up in the way they should. So you should be very particular about what you flush down a toilet or down a drain. And so people were flushing Yorkshire puddings down a drain in, I think it was Suffolk?
Yes.
No, yeah, Ipswich in Ipswich. Suffolk.
Mm.
And they found this giant glug of like Yorkshire puddings, and they were pretty distinctly Yorkshire puddings, just kind of like a soggy, unappetizing collection of them.
Yeah, I grew up on those things.
They're already pretty gross.
Yeah. Now New York City tells you, because like you should never put wet wipes down the toilet. There's new ones that they're saying are flushable that are probably not really still flushable. And so New York City actually has a campaign that says you should only flush the four P's. Let's see if you can guess what the four P's are. Things that you are supposed to flush down the toilet.
Poo-poo. Okay.
Pencils. Yep. Pencils.
Pencils.
peacocks.
Paraphernalia, like drugs.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right. So poop and pee you got. Puke and toilet paper the other. So poop, pee, puke, and toilet paper are the four P's you should flush.
This Which is actually a public that, service announcement.
It reminds me a little bit of, remember there was that fad of putting like little plastic beads into like soaps and stuff.
Oh yeah.
And then terrible. they discovered all these like microplastics in all of the fish and stuff.
Yeah.
In their guts. That's still a stuff. Problem. It is. It's still a problem. So it also happens from like plastics and stuff breaking down, but they think that one of the big problems was all of the little micro beads in soaps and other stuff, and even any of the ones that had like flecks of color were often like a form of glitter or whatever, which again were little microplastic things that wouldn't break down.
Yeah, we all know.
Speaking of before the COVID world we live in. I flew out to San Francisco for a conference and I took a plastic water bottle with me and I had a plastic straw inside of it, right? if you don't know, plastic straws are super illegal in California, or at least they're like next to impossible to find. And a buddy of mine saw me drinking out of it. And he's like, JJ, next time you come to California, can you bring me a whole bag of plastic straws? Because I desperately want one. I hate these fucking pieces of paper. And I'm like, he wants me to smuggle in plastic straws to California. So we live in a weird world.
I mean, he could have just ordered them on Amazon if he really wanted them.
I don't know. Any sufficiently illegal product will have an underground market. That's funny.
It would be interesting to go back and see how effective those campaigns are. Like, you think about in the like the 80s or 90s when we had the big push against styrofoam in takeout.
And Dare. Dare was great.
Hey, that worked for me. Scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Drugs are really expensive. No, that's not what Dare.
It was don't agree recreational entertainment.
Oh, drug abuse resistance education.
That's right.
Between 1983 and 2009, you may be surprised to learn that scientists have repeatedly shown that this program did not work. The first thing that shows up when I Google Dare. Well, it worked on me.
So basically, it's one of those like statements of like when you argue what is a millennial, they probably went through Dare. They probably heard a modem start to get them on the internet. Is another another stand.
Wait, that is a millennial, or that millennium. Is a that's a millennial falcon.
A falcon. That's where like millennium. Oh fuck! Now I'm doing it.
I feel like that's more that like gap that like not quite.
It's me.
Not quite millennium, right?
It's like I'm just like 5 years younger than you, and I'm right on the cusp of the last people to hear modems,
right?
Yeah,
sing their pretty song. Yeah.
So elder millennial.
Yeah, elder millennial.
It's like 79 to like 85 is the like the range of that. You didn't have internet all the time. You had to like actually access the internet. You didn't grow up with any type of real social media, and you don't know who Jimmy Carter is, right? And that's kind of the branch right there, where the world changed drastically in such a short amount of time. In times of, it's when MTV stopped like showing music videos, right? Like if you grew up at that time period, that's one way to videos. Kind of
The reference I've enjoyed, which is the people that are sort of somewhere between X and millennial, being the Oregon Trail generation.
Exactly. That's a very good way of putting it too. Yep.
Yeah, I think.
Which, like, Matt, that's a game that your parents played?
Oh, no. Get out of here. I played it plenty. I used to try to skip recess to stay inside and, you know, hunt more bison.
I recently found a version of a game that I used to play on, I think it was an Atari. It was called North vs. South. It was an Atari computer. At the time, I did
unacceptable these days.
No, at the time, I didn't realize how racist it was. Like, I genuinely didn't get it, and I enjoyed it because it was like a Civil War kind of simulation, like cartoony.
Yeah.
Do yourself a favor. Look up some of the things in it. It's real bad.
Now he enjoys it even more because he understands the references and agrees with them.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
It's real bad.
So funny. Yeah, well,
there's a lot of things that didn't age well.
Yeah,
isn't that really something? Like, it happened so fast. What was I? It was an uncomfortable conversation with my mother, where it just, I don't think I want to go into it on the air. Never mind. It was one of those historically, like, gender role things that seem normal that we were saying is not normal and is probably pretty creepy by today's standards. And she's like, oh, it doesn't mean that. It did. That stuff changes really fast. On something I am comfortable talking about, we watched Predator not so long ago, which in my mind, classic action movie. Still
absolutely.
Is.
I've never seen any of them.
Still to this day, the first one is like properly interesting and creepy in like how this being is just part of this other war happening. But all the humor in that show is incredibly sexist and racist and homophobic. Like, all, it's got the trifecta of just, you know, 80s culture. I'm just like, and you're just basking in the toxic masculinity while, like, this plot line that you know really well if you were raised right, unlike JJ. so you're just, it's we're already hitting it at our age of, like, things have changed quite a lot, and in a way I appreciate for sure, but I can also see why there's backlash at times when people are just like, they feel like they're no longer quote unquote allowed to think what they think.
Hey, we can all just join Parler and start using,
get our stuff hacked.
Yeah. No, that's that. We should probably end here on this statement, because this was bonkers if you haven't heard this story, because this is crazy. So people in the very far right, they started moving this thing called Parler, which is, was supposed to be like a Twitter clone for them.
But like Michigan, Boston?
Facebook clone.
Like
far it was right. A Facebook clone. I'm sorry. Yeah. It was in general, but the what's, sorry, I get flustered because the story is just bonkers.
It's so funny. You're good, man.
Yeah. So they all like had an exodus to this third party Parler thing. And it was supposed to like go through a process to become into talk to people around in your same kind of bubble or whatever. Well, it turns out whoever set it up on WordPress. And as we all know, as technologists, WordPress is not exactly known to be the most secure environment. Well, there's a level of verification you can get. You have to put your real name down, your driver's license number, and your social security number. Now, it's wrong that I say these words. It's
so funny.
I know it's wrong that I say these words, but the main demographic of people who went to this thing aren't exactly the most technically savvy people in the world. So of course they hand this information over. Within like 72 hours of this thing like being mainstream, they had a massive data breach of name, social security number, and driver's license out on the web, just out there. Like all these people like who were known as very staunch conservative, because that's, they got onto Parler for this, now have all of their personal information out onto the internet where anyone can pick it and do fraud with it.
Now, to be fair, the entire database of Texas driver licenses and their details were stolen and leaked a few weeks back.
That is a failure of government. That should be expected, but a failure of a private company alleging perfect privacy.
It's not even like a private. It was like, from what I've read, it's like four guys, like four random people who were just like, well, we need a way to get off of like Facebook/Twitter. Let's just use WordPress. Cool, we're done. Like, come on.
I did not see that coming.
Yeah. That's it. We can't do better. We peaked.
Yep. Hey. On that note, gentlemen. Bye.
Good job.
Good job.
Are we going to stop recording and shoot the shit for a minute?
Or are we please stop recording.
Can't find the button. There we go.